One day, just before I left the hospital, I heard Mommy talking to the doctor who was the surgeon. She was telling him about the red birthmark I had when I was born. One just like it came on my right shoulder in the same spot as it was on my left shoulder when I was a baby. This was when I got sick with the tummy aches and the pain in my left leg. It finally disappeared all by itself in a few weeks. We went home in the automobile, 2 weeks before Mommy's wedding anniversary on October 15th. It was the end of September 1950. I went for my treatments, but finally I couldn't eat anything. I drank tea. I felt nauseated all the time. I read and laid in bed. Once in a while, I dressed myself when I felt better, and we went for rides in the car. I read and read about Little Women by Louisa May Alcott and Winnie the Pooh by A.A. Milne, and about Heidi and lots of other books. Whenever I heard our tea kettle whistle, I knew Mommy was making tea for me. We bought our whistling tea kettle at Jenkins Hardware Store just before I got sick. We went in one day, and we bought all kinds of utensils for our kitchen. We bought the copper trig kettle. I liked the sound. It was cheerful. One day I was very, very happy. Sandra came to see me. She brought me lots of charms. After she was there for a while, I didn't feel very good, and I had to lie down on the bed. We did mirror writing and dressed dolls and played tic-tac-toe and crossword puzzles. Then we said goodbye. I felt sick, but I wanted to walk to the door with her. I said, "Goodbye, Sandra," and I threw her a kiss. She said, "Goodbye, Linda," and threw me a kiss. Then Mommy drove her home. One day a man came about a kitchen table. We had talked to him at the Sears store on North Avenue. He showed us one we liked in a catalog, and he came this day to show it to us again, and Mommy called to me, who was in the living room. I got up out of bed, and I put on my plaid blouse and my blue jeans with my cowboy belt that is leather and has shiny horses' heads on it. I walked into the living room and sat in our Mr. Boston rocking chair. I wanted to be sure Mommy got the right table. The man wrote it all down. It was gray and shiny chromium. Beauty Chrome set 63RP/number 915, and it had red Chinese writing on the corner of it and nice smooth rounded edges. The chairs were red with chromium legs and beads around the gray shadow box inside the back of each chair, with a red Chinese letter inside. There was white piping around the back. The edges were all round and smooth. We ordered 3 chairs. One day Aunt Dorothy came to see me. She heard I wasn't better and I couldn't eat. She made oatmeal for me. I didn't eat it. While she was talking with Mommy about how to feed me, I suddenly ached so much from my head to my feet that I screamed, "Get me up off this bed!" Mommy ran to me, white as the sheet. She lifted me, but I still screamed. She called the doctor. She wanted me to be in the hospital where she could make me more comfortable. He said it was a good idea. He told her to call an ambulance in Towson. She called the fire department. They had a bright red ambulance that they kept so shiny and clean and looking like new, called County Ambulance No. 1. Mommy said, "Linda, dear, they can help us more in the hospital. You and I can ride there in the beautiful ambulance. You can tell all your friends about it when you go back to your school." I couldn't talk, but I nodded my head. We took my blue blanket and my rubber foam pillow, and the man who came laid me gently on the stretcher. Mommy sat with me and held my hand. It was night time, and we rode slowly to the hospital. It was Halloween time. I didn't know, then, that Halloween meant Hallowed Eve. I thought Halloween was only meant for parties and fun and tricks or treats. When we got there, I had to be taken to the children ward, the Johnson ward. But they let Mommy stay. She sat up all night on a chair. The next day was Halloween, October 31st, 1950. There were lots of children. I watched while Mommy helped make a party for them. We had bought lots of Halloween plates and napkins and things at Hoshel Cones at Belvedere Avenue while I was feeling well one day. I helped pick them. Mommy took them when we left the house, telling me she would give me a Halloween party. She used all these things at the children's party. They were all sick children, but they enjoyed the party. In a couple of days, we were given a private room. This time it was on a higher floor, the 4th floor, room 412. Granddaddy came to see me every day. Mommy stayed with me. She never left me except on voting day, and that was a very important day. Then Mrs. Thomas came and stayed with me a little while. On Tuesday, November 7th, 1950, Mommy went all the way to Towson, but a man gave her wrong directions and she couldn't find a voting place. She ran into the house and brought me a few things instead. Mommy rubbed me with cocoa butter and took care of me. I felt very, very bad part of the time. She could always make me feel better by soothing me, though. One day, when Granddaddy stood near my bed, I ached so I groaned. Mommy soothed my head and my legs, and I couldn't make any other sound to let her know she helped me. We always had helped each other when I was home. One day I put my arms around my mommy and I said, "Mommy, I want you to live forever." "Oh, but I'll get old and I won't be pretty." "I'll always love you, Mommy, no matter how old you are." I wanted Mommy to know I'll never stop loving her. I know she will never stop loving me, too.
Part 2, Easter.
"Come back, Linda, come back," I heard Mommy cry out. You see, I was leaving here, and we both knew it all of a sudden. Soon afterwards, I knew why, because God showed me, and I wanted to help Mommy see why. She didn't have anybody to talk to about God the way we did together after I left, and she was all lost and sad. When I went back to the hospital on the night before Halloween, I stayed only until November 16th, 1950. That was the day I left. It was on Thursday, and the time was 1:35 p.m. Then the nurses took Mommy out of the room. She couldn't stand it, being away from me while I was leaving her. But in a little while, she knew in her heart that I was with God and that He had sent for me to come be with Him. And since she loved Him so much, she felt a little better. For several days before I left Mommy, there hung a dress and slippers on the back of my door in the hospital. Aunt Dorothy visited me and wanted to make me happy, so she asked Mommy what she could bring me. Mommy knew that for a long time I had wanted a ballet costume that was all spangles and white, all shining. She told Aunt Dorothy what I said. "I want a ballet costume all white satin and tulle, all fluffy, with a little pink and white on it," I told Mommy when she asked me. I wanted some pink on it because I wanted pink ballet slippers, too. Aunt Dorothy's eyes sparkled because she could do something to make me happy. That same day, Aunt Dorothy called two places in Washington where she lived, where they made ballet costumes. One place didn't have what she asked for. At the other place, a woman answered the telephone. "Come right over. I have a ballet costume here that will fit your description exactly, and it's the exact size for the child." When she got there, there was a funeral parlor on the first floor. The lady's husband was an undertaker, and they knew all about illness. Aunt Dorothy told her about me, and that I had a lump in me that was called a long name. She told my aunt about an old doctor in Canada who had claimed to cure many people from it with a serum he would not send out of the country. He said it had to be given only under the conditions he gave it under, called the Het treatment, at 1441 Sandwich Street, East Windsor. When Mommy listened to this, they sat together in the waiting room, Aunt Dorothy and Mommy. They heard a lady there talking about the same thing. Mommy went to talk with the woman, and she gave her a little booklet about the work doctor had done. She wanted to take me there, but there wasn't enough time. Everybody knew I would be leaving soon, but Mommy kept begging them not to give up hope on me. They did everything for me that they could. But God wanted me to come. The white ballet costume was my burial dress. That was the beginning of my new life. Everybody said I looked as if I were just sleeping in my white satin bodice with little pink and white flowers all over the top and a beautiful white fluffy tulle skirt, very short, showing my legs all the way from the top of my thigh to my feet in pink ballet slippers, and all over the skirt were sparkling rhinestones. Soon after I left, things that were very unusual began to happen to my mommy. Each time that something made her very, very unhappy and sad, and she would lose her strength, something would happen to bring her back and give her a little more strength. God wanted her to be strong and do things for Him, and he knew how she wanted to see that I was really very near her, and happy, and living in another way than when I was with her. She wanted to find out more and more about the things people should know about faith. Mommy had good friends who believed the way she did, and they all helped her. I told her once never to forget her friends, for friends are very, very important. I never forgot mine. That's why I wanted to go see Ford. He gave me the little ship charm with sails that moved to remind me to come see him at Blocked Island some summer. I promised I'd come. I'm glad we went. My friends were all very true. Miss Stella Ivy, who worked as a secretary in the university where Mommy met her, was a true friend of Mommy, and she told her about a dream she had of me in a ballet dress. Mrs. Ivy never knew about the real ballet dress I wore until I left here, but a week before that, before I went, she had a beautiful dream. She saw me in the dancing costume, dancing with thousands of children, laughing and singing and very, very happy. She told Mommy much later on. Miss Ivy knew me, and we were together, the three of us, when I was with Mommy a few times. Not long after I left and the strange things began to happen, Mommy had a dream. It was during the night. She was dreaming, but the dream was like awakening. Mommy and I were together in Mrs. Ivy's apartment. It was very real, and she was seeing it very clearly. I was seated in a chair that was an antique mellow kind of chair with spindle legs. There was a light shining from way up high on the wall, and I was sitting in a chair holding a blue goblet, and the goblet was shining very brilliantly. The blue was so tremendously bright that Mommy asked me about it. I said, "Mommy, this beautiful blue glass, look at it carefully. This is the beginning of everything wonderful and beautiful for you." Mommy knew I was really there because it was all so real, and she saw the furniture and everything there so clearly. The next morning, Mommy wrote a letter to Mrs. Ivy. She couldn't keep the dream to herself. She told Mrs. Ivy about the dream and my being there with her, and about the furniture and the blue goblet and the light shining from the wall near the ceiling. Mrs. Ivy was very surprised because Mommy had never ever been to her apartment, and she had described a chair in her apartment, the one I was sitting in, and she had described the china closet. And the light from the windows, little transom windows, was coming up from way up high. They were sort of attic windows, through which the light just streamed down. She asked Mommy to come to her place to have lunch with her soon after that. She was a little afraid for Mommy to come, but she wanted her to. She was afraid because she didn't know how shocked Mommy might be when she got there. The Episcopal Church Emmanuel was just one block away from the building, on Cathedral and Reed. The apartment was on Cathedral and Madison at the corner, and the little top windows looked out on the tower of Emmanuel Church. This is important to remember. Mommy climbed up the three flights of stairs and walked in where she had been before, with me, in her dream. She felt very, very happy, but very, very mystified. They had lunch, and Mommy suddenly felt she wanted to write. She walked over to her bookcase and started to look through the books. This was just a few weeks after I had gone away from her. And she saw a little book. It was Ralph Waldo Emerson's birthday book. And she opened it to a page. And there it said, March the 2nd. That was my birthday. There was a little poem Emerson had written. The world rolls round, mistrust it not. Befalls again what once befell. All things return, both sphere and mote, and I shall hear my bluebird's note and dream the dream of Auburn Dell. You see, a few days before then, Mommy and Daddy had driven to the cemetery, and they drove up to the top of the hill where there was a memorial park where there weren't any tombstones. I had told Mommy lots of times, I like a cemetery that looks like a park because then you don't think about death. You think about life and beauty. There was a beautiful plaque there, and it said, "He maketh me to lie down in green pastures." Linda Suzanne Wasserman, born March 2nd, 1942, died November 16th, 1950. There was a beautiful rose next to my name. I loved roses very much. The day they drove there, As they came to the top of the hill, there were bluebirds, hundreds and hundreds of bluebirds, circling around the place where my name was. After a little while, they flew away. They have never been there since. Mommy picked up another book after a while. It was Shelley's poetry. She found his Ode to the West Wind. She felt very close to me as she read it. Suddenly, she decided to start writing a play with me in it, with music and poetry, carrying on our D's together for the radio program to help other children who like to learn about beautiful music and poetry and all about God. That was really the beginning of many wonderful things for Mommy. She made a little ceramic tray for Mrs. Ivy with a bluebird on it to bring her happiness too. The new writing led to her taking a trip all the way to California in the summer of 1951, and she was happy. She got to work on the program. She decided to write to Mr. John Charles Thomas to ask permission to use his recording of The Lord's Prayer as the ending for the program, and she told him about her idea. One day, she found in the mailbox a catalog from the Music Academy of the West. Mr. Thomas had just been made the new director. Next, she received a letter from the secretary telling her she could apply for a scholarship at the Music Academy. She mailed the records made from the program to Mr. Thomas, and then he wrote her a letter giving her the scholarship. She sang a few little songs on the records. Mr. Thomas wanted to help her. She was very happy about it, but she couldn't decide whether she should go. There was someone who helped her decide to make this trip to Santa Barbara. Laura met Mommy around the time this happened. Laura was about 21 years old, and she liked to have fun and see people dress up and be happy. They met each other because one day Mommy went to retrieve her books on the history of making chinaware that she had loaned to a friend who had made ceramics too. The friend lived near a drugstore in downtown Baltimore, near the Washington Monument and the Walters Art Gallery and the Peabody Conservatory of Music. The woman, who was supposed to be home waiting, had gone out unexpectedly, and Mommy left her a note saying she'd be back, and wrote her name, Mrs. Ian Ross McFarlane, on it. Mommy walked over to the drugstore and had a Coke, and then she decided to sit down at the table where a girl sat with an older woman. They had just come from a church. The girl was talking about the color of the vestments of the priest. Mommy was particularly interested in the colors used in churches and the meanings of the colors in the churches because of something wonderful and tremendous that had happened to her a few months after I left her. Mommy had a vision that was close to God, and she thought about it all the time. The girl in the drugstore started talking about a vision she had in November 1950, when she had been sort of half awake and half asleep, and smiling. Her sisters couldn't waken her. She dreamed she was in a church, the St. Alphonsus Church on Park Avenue and Saratoga Streets, and an angel in the radiant chapel, glistening with light, beckoned to her to come to the altar. She was afraid. She didn't want to go. That part of the church is to the right of the altar. It's the Purgatory Chapel. Finally, she went and the angel said to her, "Do you see this woman standing here?" The angel pointed to a beautiful woman in a lovely white satin wedding gown, holding her arm bent for the arm of a man who was not there. The angel said, "Say these 15 prayers for this woman, and you will receive great graces in heaven." Laura said the prayers, but she didn't know why it was, or why it happened, and nothing had ever happened to explain it. Nothing at all. Then Mommy told her about her dream, her vision of the angels, and Mommy and Laura became very good friends. Laura had liked to walk in Mount Vernon Square, and all day she had wanted to take a walk there, but she didn't have anyone to walk with, and there Mommy was, the answer to her prayer. They took a walk in Mount Vernon Square and looked at the pigeons and talked and wandered around. Mommy told her all about me and how suddenly the offer of a scholarship at the academy came about. Mommy couldn't decide if she should go. It was going to be a big expense, and she didn't want to ask for any help. She knew she'd have to if she went. Laura was eager for her to take advantage of it. She felt Mommy was really supposed to go. Laura decided, too, to have eternal prayers said for me. She was Catholic. Catholics give lots of money to the church to be used in different ways. She wanted to give some money to the church and have masses and prayers said for me. So she took Mommy over to the Catholic church way out in West Baltimore. It was a monastery called St. Joseph's Passionist Fathers. There was a chapel next to the monastery, an old church. After Laura gave the contribution of her money that she had worked hard for, Mommy was given her certificate of eternal prayers being said by the fathers for me. Then Laura said, "If Linda doesn't need those prayers, she can give them to someone else who will. Let's go into the church right by us here." They went in together, through the chapel into the church. Laura took holy water and blessed herself with it. She told Mommy to do it. Mommy did, but not very seriously. She didn't do a good job because she kept thinking, "I wonder if there are any germs in this holy water. All these people are dipping their fingers in here. And, after all those fingers have been dipped in there, you know there must be a lot of colds and things to be gotten from it." She knew she really shouldn't be thinking that, but she was anyhow. They said some prayers and came out into the little place that held the holy water font. They stood between the font and the racks of periodicals. Laura picked one up. It was a story about Pope Pius X, and the story was about his trip. He had to borrow money, he had to pawn everything he had, but he made this trip that ended in his becoming Pope Pius X. He was a wonderful man whose name had been Sarto, and he was a tailor. He loved children very, very much, and he is called the Children's Pope. He was always in debt because he always gave everything he had to others or to anybody who needed his help. Laura was reading this paragraph, and they were standing right near the holy basin where the water was kept. While she was reading about the fact the Pope had to borrow money to make the trip, water was suddenly sprinkled all over Mommy. She stepped back and, looking up at the ceiling, wondered where the water could be coming from. She called to the sexton. "Sexton, the ceiling must be leaking." He said, "It can't be, because the organ's up above." Mommy said, "Well, it must be my imagination." Laura went on to the end of the paragraph, and suddenly she too was sprinkled with water. She looked all around her, and she couldn't believe it. She couldn't understand it. In this particular church, the holy water was kept in the vestibule, rather than inside. It was a very old church. Laura hadn't paid any attention when Mommy felt the water, but she herself felt it on the back of her right hand and wrist. It was a light sprinkle of water. She jumped and said to my mother, "Eleanor, did you feel water just then?" Mommy said, "Yes, I did, on my forehead and my wrist." Laura said, "Oh well, that's nothing." Then Laura was sprinkled again on her right hand and wrist. Then she believed something very mystical had happened. She said to Mommy, "We were both sprinkled very much like when the priest takes the silver thing and blesses with holy water. I thought at first, Eleanor, you had doused yourself with holy water." Well, since this was one of Mommy's first real visits to churches, she didn't know anything at all about what happens in churches, so she listened. Next, Mommy decided to borrow the money to take the trip. After this, she decided she had to be baptized before she went. She couldn't take any chances on not joining me if she left everybody too. So all these things she decided to do because of Laura's giving the $5 gift for me to the church. At the same time, Mommy began to want to give as much as she could to churches because they all work for God and help people. She started out with a gift from me. When we moved to the house in Towson, I helped carry all the magazines and newspapers into the basement. We stacked them all together. She and Daddy heard a choir concert at the Faith Presbyterian Church one night, just by chance. In their program, the church asked for papers to sell to help build a new church on Loch Raven Boulevard. The Reverend Mr. Jackson was the minister. The new church was near Woodbourne Avenue. She called them the next day. They came to get the papers. Whenever she rode past the new church later, she thought, "My papers must have bought a brick or two." Mommy thought we should help all the churches, for the money given to a church becomes holy and blessed. Churches are a sanctuary to worship and love God. They should all be our best happy places and invite everybody to come in and pray with love, forgetting everything except our Father who art in heaven, and be thinking about our God first. Mommy was very glad the church had helped her decide to go to California. She found real happiness again for a little while in music and in song, and in so many beautiful thoughts and so many wonderful people. But she never stopped thinking about the vision. She wanted to write all about it, just as she had wanted to paint a picture of the vision. When she left California, she took the Northwest Passage back home. She went to see Aunt Celeste and her children and Uncle Morton. She stayed with them a week. She told the story to Uncle Morton. He wanted Mommy to write it all down. Uncle Morton was a psychiatrist, and he had a big clinic and a secretary. So Mommy went with him the next day to his office. She told the story into a dictaphone, and the secretary typed it. It was 22 pages. That was the beginning of this book. Uncle Morton was interested in extrasensory perception, something about knowing about things we don't see around us. But Mommy was interested only in getting the story told. She just couldn't keep it to herself. She had to tell it. This is the way she told it, like the way she talked about it, because she told it into the machine, and a lot of sentences run into each other. Mommy likes to talk a lot, but I don't mind it. I like it most of the time. These are the 22 pages.